Hello and welcome to the Geek Embassy Watches Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here with Ryan and Mark today. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello, guys.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, it's an oldie but a goodie. It had to happen. I set it up, right? And we are here to talk about another summer superhero movie. Because that seems to be what we're talking about these days.
Who picks these movies again?
Not Ryan. Ryan's going to get to pick the next movie. So this is our July selection, Spider-Man Homecoming. It came out a week and a half ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's a continuation in the Marvel universe with some familiar characters. Funny story. So Chris has not seen the Captain America movies.
So he didn't have the Civil War reference.
He didn't get the inside joke to anything.
He had no context for this whatsoever. When I told him we were going to go see Spider-Man, he thought it was a continuation of who was the guy who used to play Spider-Man?
Tobey Maguire?
Yeah, Tobey Maguire.
Oh, it was Tobey Maguire. I can't remember the guy who did it in between.
Was there another one?
Yeah. There was, yeah. There was a two movie, The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Was.
Oh, I think I missed those. I don't even think I saw them. Anyway, that's how out of touch Chris is with Spider-Man, because he thought it was going to be like that storyline continuing. So he thought it was going to be Tobey Maguire's character and continuing off that series.
That was a long time ago.
When we walked in, and he was like, at first, and then I realized, because, okay, so just to start, I loved the open with the viral video that he was making about the appearance in Captain America. Right, I'm loving this, and I realized about halfway through it that Chris had no idea what was going on. what is happening? I look over at him, he's stoic, but he's like looking at it, and then he starts to kind of tilt his head to the side, and I was like, oh yeah, honey.
By the way, let me catch you up.
So I was like, yeah, you know those Captain America movies we haven't watched?
Yeah, they kind of.
I've seen them, but he hasn't. So there's this disconnect with that too. So anyway, that was funny.
Well, even a big part of the storyline was the first Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the cleanup and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that he had seen the Avengers movies. He's seen those, but he hadn't seen Captain America.
Right.
Which I get confused, and I couldn't remember that it was actually Captain America that happened in, and not the Avengers.
It was kind of like the Avengers. They were all in it anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's what, quite a few people said, and that's what I've said too. But yeah, it's not named the Avengers, and so I didn't know that when I went to see them. And so anyway, yeah. Because we did Captain America Civil War as part of the series last summer.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, Rye. You got your list?
Oh, do I
ever. I have a list this time. I made a list too.
Did you have list envy from the last one?
I had a little more that I forgot, like a bunch of what I wanted to say. So I was like, I'm writing it down this time.
Well, I don't have a list, but I do know. I want to start off by saying right away what I didn't like about the movie.
Okay, go for it.
And it's going to be pretty quick because I know Ryan will have all the finer points of it. I would imagine. But basically, my problem with it was this. Everywhere I could find on the internet, and I don't remember where I heard it or read it originally, but it was basically said, this is not going to be an origin story. It's not going to be an origin story.
Really?
And so they still found a way to kind of make it into an origin story. Not so much the, this is how I got my powers and this is why I do what I do.
Right.
But they found a way to do it with the suit instead. And
well, and him kind of growing up just in general, kind of.
Right. If you go back to Civil War, we see him in that suit, in that same suit, fighting against Falcon and Winter Soldier, and basically wrapping them up, kicks their butts and then webs them up and takes off again. Like it's nothing, right?
Right.
And at the beginning of the movie, and again, people who haven't seen the movie yet, this is a spoiler cast, so we're going to be talking about the movie in depth.
Yes, yes.
And at the beginning of the movie, Homecoming, you see him deal with those guys in the ATM kiosk. And, you know, it does go south a little bit, but when he's in there fighting him, he's really whooping ass. You know, all the stuff he's doing, just crazy moves and everything. And then for the next, I don't know, pretty much for the whole movie after that, it's like Keystone Spider-Man. He's just bumbling around everywhere. There's like a scene where he's rut chasing after guys on in a van across rooftops and like putting his feet through people's roofs and knocking over their lattices and smashing their dog houses as he's going through. I'm just like, this is the same guy who's been doing this for 6 months before he shows up in Civil War. And then I think they said, what, 8 months between Civil War and where this movie starts up. And somehow he's still kind of bumbling his way through everything. I'm just like, why? Why is he all of a sudden bumbling through everything when we saw him in Civil War whooping butt? We saw him, you know, at the beginning of this movie with those guys in the ATM kiosk doing a pretty remarkable job kicking their asses. And then from there, it's just, you know, Spidey can't get his crap together for some reason. That was, I think, the biggest thing that bugged me about the movie right there. What do you think, Ryan?
Well, let me just start out by saying I completely disagree with you.
I figured you always got to be different.
He doesn't show like Spider-Man all the time in Civil War, so it's really hard to tell what his skills were because they were following so many different superheroes, so you can't really use that too much as a basis. Him being able to grab his shield and like spit webs at things seems like a pretty common task. Yeah, a pretty basic task. And
yeah, but there's an actual fight scene between him against Falcon and Winter Soldier simultaneously. And it's not like, you know, a 3 second, you know, shot and then they're off. It's like a good beat of the movie when they're both lying there webbed up going, I think there's something about him talking too much, or I remember when it was more about fighting and not talking or something. I can't remember what the throwaway line is at the end of that, but it's an actual beat in the movie that goes on for a while, you know, him fighting these guys. And I just felt like they reverted, you know, after the first quarter of Homecoming.
Well, and, you know, part of the thing that they really made a point in the movie was that, you know, he was part of a Avengers type team, not part of the Avengers, but, you know, he was part of that team. So there was, you know, a certain cue that he was taking. And then the movie that he was in, he was just taking cues from himself. So it was the heart of this movie was, how does he balance being a teenager and Spider-Man at the same time without the support of Tony Stark or Happy, as it was in the movie, or the rest of the Avengers? He was, you know, he had nobody to take a cue from. So he was doing all this stuff for the first time, theoretically. And we don't know what he did in that 8 months. But, you know, the fact that he can move around in a controlled space as opposed to being able to fly through whatever city, is it New York City, is that where he lives? You know, him, you know, being able to fly through New York City without being able to bump into things, you know.
Well, that was
I don't care how cool you are in any superhero movie, and that's one of my notes is, you know, the gratuitous destruction of property, as there is in most superhero movies. But
it was painful in Homecoming for me for some reason.
Well, yeah.
Well, the scene where he's on top of the Washington Monument, though, and he's up there and he's like freaking out, and it's like, she's like, "What's the matter, Peter?" And he's like, "I've never been this high before." I'm like, really? You've been running around in New York City, who's got some of the tallest buildings in the world, and you just now decided that this is the highest you've ever been? I just didn't buy it. I'm like, you're in New York City, man. I'm sure at some point or another you went up on a building that was...
Well, you know, but I think, like, I don't know, like, this is adding a lot of story into it that isn't there, but the Washington Monument is such an isolated, you know, tower, as opposed to, like, being on the side of a building where you're next to, like, other buildings, and he could kind of, like, jump back and forth between them. So I felt it for that reason, because it was like he couldn't like shoot his webs off and jump onto another building.
All right, I can see that. And that so might be
that was where I thought, like, because it was such an isolated spot, like he just got to the top of it and there was nowhere for him to go.
Yeah,
as opposed to being in a, you know, in a city, he'd have lots of options.
That makes a little more sense to me, but I think they should have framed it that way then instead of it.
I mean, they didn't. I'm not saying that they did. That's how I saw it though when I was, but I think part of it for me was I was seeing, I don't know if you guys watched the trailer for the game, that there's a new Spider-Man game coming out.
No.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen video of it. I haven't watched the trailer.
Yeah, there's a trailer and some gameplay. I saw it at E3, and so it was one of the big things. I think it was from Sony. I can't remember who it was that had it out.
There
but
she goes on an E3 experience interface yet again.
I didn't see anything that the public couldn't see in terms of Spider-Man, though. So it's not really all that special. But there was a lot of the motion in the game is the jumping back and forth between the buildings. And that was in my mind as he was going through that evolution. Because as I watched the gameplay trailer, I kept thinking, I'm going to puke if I play this game. Like, I'm seriously going to hurl if I play this game. Because all it was this, like, you're supposed to, like, flip under and shoot your webs up. And you're supposed to catch a crane that you have to, like, wrap the webs around a crane. And you're trying to shoot and jump and hang. And I'm like, I will hurl. Like, I can't play this game. Like, I know that this is going to make me ill. So I was thinking about that game, I think, partially as I was watching the movie. And so I think that that might have been why I was more likely to make that kind of a connection to that being isolated, the tower. Because I was like, in the game mechanics, you wouldn't have any other way to kind of work his strategy. Mm-hmm. But it really could have been just a simple line where he's like, you know, I'm used to just jumping on another building or something like that to have, like, put it in context.
Yeah.
But then again, you don't see, I don't know, because most of the stuff you see of him doing, like, leading up to that stuff is swinging off of light poles and, you know, maybe four-story buildings, and they don't...
Yeah.
Maybe he hadn't really gone that high before because he was unsure of his tech, you know.
Yeah, he didn't know how far they shot.
That was also part of the movie. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you saw him, like, you know, I guess updating or reworking the web formula during the movie. So
when they took the training wheels off, when they illegally took the training wheels off. I love that scene.
Right. Yeah, that was good.
Where they hack into it and they're like, oh, it's got a training wheels protocol. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
The guy in the chair.
Yeah, the guy in the chair.
What was the other protocol? Baby something, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. What was it? It was not training wheels, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't either. But... there was another one that they found at the very end. He says something like, well, once they take off the such and such protocol. I don't remember what that one was.
I don't know. I would disagree with you on the aspect of that he was, like, you know, full on trained by Avengers and, you know, not.
I didn't say he was trained by Avengers. I'm just saying that we see him fighting against.
No, as in. Is not trained by Avengers, but, you know, like, he knew what he was doing in the Avengers movie, and all of a sudden he didn't know what he was doing. I just, you know, I think he was defending himself in the Avengers and, you know, learning on how to be, you know, use his tools more effectively in this movie.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a refining going on in what, you know, what we see him doing. And a testing of his powers. Because he even says when he's the, you know, what do you name her? Janice? I can't remember.
Karen.
When he names Karen and he's talking with her, he's like, well, how far do your, you know, he didn't know how far his webs would shoot. So he really was unproven in a lot of ways. And I thought about it in the way that the context of the movie, I thought in terms of his appearance in Civil War, for me, had to do with the adrenaline rush he would have had going into an Avengers event. Like, they were already all there and he was being thrown in as, like, this little, you know, thing. And so if it was this, like, he didn't have the suit before, he was unproven, but he had the same similar technology that he had made for himself, and he had his own suit that, you know, he obviously abandoned, you know, when he got the one from Tony Stark, you know, in that scene in the movie in Civil War, he would have been pumped up with the adrenaline of the situation, which he wouldn't have had otherwise.
I don't know. I think you'd be pumped up with adrenaline if somebody's, you know, trying to shoot you with an otherworldly ray or, you know.
But I didn't find he was, I didn't think he was that sloppy then. Like, I thought he started to get sloppy when he started making hasty decisions.
Yeah, that may have been it. I don't know. I just, I felt like they were kind of going back and forth on what he was capable of doing and where and how confident he was coming across, you know, in one movie to the next. And, you know, even in different parts of the beginning of the movie, the Homecoming movie to the next, you know, so.
Yeah. I know. I thought that it made it, I thought more of his journey wasn't about his technical abilities as much as it was about him learning how to be a discerning decision maker, which I think is totally appropriate for a not origin story.
Yeah, those parts I didn't have a problem with. It was just like literally some of his, the things where they made him out to be, you know, kind of a bumbling boob, you know, as it were, like, you know, when he was doing that thing where he's chasing the van and smashing everybody's houses and, you know, it's just like, come on, man. I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a second that this guy who's got superhuman dexterity and has fought against other members of the Avengers team previously and didn't look like he was bumbling around then is going to be, you know, having issues while he's just trying to pursue a van. It just, I couldn't buy that part. But I understand what you're saying about his decision making and about, you know, trying to decide how he's going to do things and all that kind of stuff. I totally agree with that. I think that stuff made sense. It's just the actual, you know, physical stuff that I just didn't buy it. I just was like, nope, sorry.
Yeah, well, that didn't stand out to me necessarily. So I'm, you know, if I were inclined to watch it again in the theaters, which I'm not, it's a fun popcorn movie, but it's not something I'm going to go back to. You know, it might be something that I could look for, but it wasn't something that stood out to me.
Yeah. Right. You were mentioning something about the property damage in the movie. What were your thoughts about it?
I don't know. It always just seems like, oh, there's a building. We should smash them into that. Or, you know, just sort of that, which, yeah, I don't know. It's just getting old, like a stale, like, weapon, I guess. You know, oh, we're going to take this bus and, you know, smack them with the bus and, you know, with this heavy claw. Why do you have to do that? Why can't you just walk up and continue to punch him with that thing? Because you have to show destruction for the sake of destruction, which goes back to if he was really flipping that bus around, would the people not in the school right next door not figure this out? same way as when we went back to Wonder Woman and the, you know, the fight in the control tower that nobody seemed to notice. You know, it's, well, just,
I think I agree with you with the destruction aspect of it, but it works in certain places, like when the Chitauri invasion happens in the first Avengers movie. Yeah, that would happen. Your city would get wrecked if you had these giant monstrosity biomechanical worm things flying through without a care in the world. Yeah, they would wreck stuff, you know. That makes perfect sense to me. When I'm watching Spider-Man do it, I'm just like going, man, that's people's houses, dude. You just wrecked their roof. You know how expensive that's going to be to replace?
Yeah, right.
And the part with the fairy, when the fairy gets
split in half. Oh, God, the fairy split in half? Oh, God.
I was just like, I'm watching that going, okay, so we just watched Civil War where everybody gets all bent out of shape because of the Sokovia thing happening in Ultron.
Right.
And then, you know, cut to Tony Stark, you know, berating him about it. But there's like, other than that, there's no fallout from it. You don't see anything on the news about it. Nobody's yelling about, hey, I almost died and my car got sunk, you know, in the middle of the river, you know, or anything like that. I'm like going, so right there, Ryan, I agree with you. That set piece right there is like, there should have been fallout, you know, because we just went through this thing with the Sokovia Accords.
Yeah, it's almost like they couldn't set it up and, you know, they can't pick and choose where they use that, right? It has to continue in the universe. Where,
right.
Like, well, exactly. It's going to be an issue here. It should be an issue there, too.
But, I mean, in fairness to, like, the ferry and the bank, which was in the news, they were really using that as a part of the storyline to sell the fact that
dangerous weapons.
Know, yeah, that Spider-Man was, you know, messing around with this technology that, you know, he didn't understand. And there was a line, you know, by Michael Keaton in the film, that you don't understand what you're doing with this weaponry. And like, he was absolutely correct. Not that I'm, you know, often there to agree with the villains, but you know, he wasn't being mean about it. He was specifically saying, you don't know what you're doing. You know, you are, yes, taking these from us, but you're also destroying these, which are then destroying the boat and destroying the bank and, you know, taking out the deli that you're so fond of. And that was completely on Spider-Man. You know, that had nothing to do with the villain. That's the thing. It was just like, and that's one of the notes is that, you know, the trials of being a teenager and a superhero, just wasn't thinking through his decisions.
No, you know, you wouldn't when you're, was he 15 or 16? I can't remember.
I didn't think they said he was 15.
Yeah, when you're 15, you don't, you know, he's not thinking about that. He was like, oh, look, there's people robbing a bank, and it's the first time I'm going to get some real action since I was with the Avengers, you know, so.
I think another reason why I was really bugged by the whole not jumping on, you know, the property destruction thing that they had in Civil War and Ultron was because in the comic book, Spider-Man is always being harangued and persecuted by the editor of, I think, the Daily Bugle, J. Jonah Jameson, who he actually works for as Peter Parker as a freelance photographer.
Right.
And that guy was always like happy to point out, you know, Spider-Man just destroyed this building, or, you know, Spider-Man just flipped over this car, you know, and stuff like that. So I guess that's also part of where that comes from. But, you know, in the greater context of the MCU, where they took the arc, you know, in the last three or four movies, it's been, and even at the end of the first Avengers movie, I'm pretty sure that I remember at the end of it and during the credit roll that, you know, they're having the thing where some people are like, you know, yay Avengers, and other people are like, you know, they destroyed this city, blah, blah, blah. They should pay for it. Who's going to pay for this mess? It's kind of been an arc for a while. I just have a problem with it not being an issue in Spider-Man. I mean, granted, the level of destruction is a lot less, but, you know, it still was a bodega and it still was a ferry where a bunch of people almost died. So,
well, they did cover the bank part was covered in the news coverage as part of the storyline. But the ferry was not. But at that point in time, it was ramping up to the climax of, you know, confronting Adrian. You know, so it was good. It was kind of the latter half of the movie, I guess.
Adrian Toomes. Oh, okay, Toomes. Yeah. I didn't catch his first name. I'm like, who's Adrian?
All right. Michael Keaton.
Yes, Michael Keaton.
Mr. Toomes.
Mr. Toomes. Vulture. It says Vulture in IMDb, but I don't remember any mention of him being Vulture. And
I don't think they did, that's who the comic book character is.
It's kind of funny that all the villains have that same kind of suit. Well, I guess the Green Goblin had the surfboard thing, but it was still kind of that same winged, like.
Well, Goblin.
There's the Green Goblin, the Hobgoblin, and then the Vulture.
And the Vulture is actually wearing his wings on his back, as opposed to
the surfboard thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a bat, I think, is what it's supposed to look like. But
it's a cool suit. Yeah. It's definitely a cool suit.
The technology he's making was really neat. Toomes is making was really cool. It just was.
I'm glad you mentioned that because super
dangerous, but you know, I really wanted the one where you could like put the four pieces together and it
made the
phase matter thing. That was awesome.
Ryan has a point that you just brought him to.
I know.
Yeah. How my notes was, how can a salvage crew interpret alien technology?
Yeah, that I don't know. Well, they had that guy, though. He wasn't part of the salvage crew originally.
Yeah, like, and who was that dude?
Yeah, there was no story on him. I noticed that, too. I was like,
I mean, he was in the story a lot because he kept talking about the high altitude, whatever.
Yes. He kept pushing toward the thing that you knew was going to have to happen at the end because he said it three times before they actually did it.
Right.
But what,
you know,
who he was and, like, his story was out of it completely.
Well, I mean, he's a tech genius, and in the MCU, there are a lot of tech geniuses, including Spider-Man, including the Black Panther, including Tony Stark.
Well, I gathered at least that much about it, but like having him just kind of show up and be sitting there without even like a line of context as to
who that, but it's, you know, we can't watch a movie about, you know, second tech genius from the right, you know, for 30 minutes just so your guys is, you know.
Right, but they could have had a throwaway line of, you know, oh, this guy worked for so-and-so.
Right.
Would have taken like 2 seconds.
Or
I mean, Tony Stark, his history was from his dad.
Yeah, exactly. You know? He could have said something like, oh, well, when I was at Stark Industries or whatever.
Or you could just assume that he is a tech genius like they're painting him out to be.
You just pointed out that you can't assume that, like, you know, that he wasn't afraid at the top of the Washington Monument because there's so much taller buildings and he wanted context there. So it's pretty much the same argument, just with something that didn't bother you as much.
Because the tech genius for Tombs is kind of a throwaway character. Spider-Man's the main character. I'm interested in Spider-Man. This guy over here is just a little bit of something to nudge the story forward.
Well, I wanted to know how they came to, I mean, there was no connection between, you know, the origin piece where it's like, oh, he's like, oh, I'm going to steal all this stuff from these guys who stole my job, to I'm making, you know, crazy powerful weapons.
Okay, well, have you watched any of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or anything like that?
Nope.
Well,
and if it's going to be a standalone movie that's not part of that, then...
It's not, though. It's an MCU movie. So it's part of the greater Marvel Cinematic Universe, which means that you're going to have to understand that since the whole invasion of New York happened, anybody who can get their hands on this stuff is trying to use it for their own gain, whether it be S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, independent criminal groups, or whatever. Everybody's trying to pick that stuff up and make stuff out of it and use it. That's one of the ongoing threads in the MCU right now, is the whole thing that happened with the Chitauri at the end of the first Avengers movie.
Word.
Have you watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Ryan?
No.
Okay.
That's why I wasn't jumping into the conversation.
Did you feel like it needed more context, that because you don't know it, like I don't know it from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Well, I can see both your points. I mean, if you know, they make the movies for both the mega fanboy, mm-hmm. you know, watch everything, and then the people that don't. And, right. you know, I don't think the average viewer was scrutinizing this part as much as we are. It just, you know, it just kind of one of those things like, oh, this guy's building all this stuff. Where did he come from?
Right. Yeah.
So, yes. Anyway, moving on. So I'm just going to kind of talk about some of the things I liked about it.
Is there anything more you didn't like, though?
Pretty
much hit it.
Yeah, I felt like it seemed like Spider-Man should have been hurt more during combat. I mean, it did show the one scene where he was hurt, but he took worse licks, you know.
I kind of assumed that his Tony Stark suit had some sort of armor to it, because he got hurt when he was in his Spider-Man suit.
But not so much when he was in the other one.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it was just a sweatshirt and sweatpants, you know, hoodie and sweatpants. So I just figured that there was something like, why would you build a suit like this knowing what he was going to be doing and not put some sort of, see, I put context in. I wrote all that in there myself.
Already.
What was that?
This podcast is becoming bitter. I must defend myself.
No, it's not like that at all. I think one of the things, I don't remember if they pointed out during the movie or if this is something that somebody somewhere mentioned. Oh, no, it was a comment I heard from a guy that was, we were walking out the theater, and he was like, yeah, they didn't do a good job of pointing out the reason that he could take such a beating was partly to do with his, you know, Spider-Man powers that he got from the spider bite, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how much that's true or not, but I guess if that's a thing, then maybe that's part of the reason why he wasn't quite hurt so much, but I don't know. You know, I just heard this from a comic book nerd as I walked past him. So,
well, I mean, hurt, but more like more physical damage, I guess. It just seems like,
like what Tobey Maguire looked like at the end of the first Spider-Man movie that he was in, where Green Goblin basically beats the hell out of him.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But, you know, again, it could be the suit, and it's a different, this is definitely a different, you know, in that version of Spider-Man, he was able to shoot webs out of his wrists, you know, and this one, he actually had to have mechanics. So, I mean, it is a different, I guess, part of this, you know, Spider-Man comics origins. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know enough about it to, you know, start saying like I do. So.
Hey, before we get to your likes, Ryan, I just want to know if Regina has any list of dislikes that really jumped out at her.
My biggest thing was, like, and it's kind of hard because it kind of critiques the whole movie, but I felt like the kid aspect got a little old at the end. Like, I felt like it kept kind of beating the same jokes over and over again about, you know, him kind of being an inept teenager, which I think kind of goes to a little bit of what you were saying, Mark, about him not having the kind of skill that you thought he was going to have. I think that was part of what, like, my... Part of my takeaway was like, it was funny because I was thinking about one of my friends on the other podcast I'm on, Steven, was really concerned about Guardians of the Galaxy 2 being too much about Baby Groot.
So, like, was Ryan.
That it was going to be too much.
So was everybody.
So much cutesy. And I thought they managed that really well. And I thought they kind of failed with this a little bit on that because it was just too much of the cute teenager stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think brought down the actual story, because he should have been picking up and learning, I think, a little faster than he actually was.
Especially since he's supposed to be, you know, a genius.
Genius
anyway.
Yeah. So. Like, I felt like he should have come to, like, a more mature decision-making place before he was, like, presented with the opportunity to become one of the Avengers, where he's like, okay, I'm going to go back to high school now. It's like, I felt like he should have gotten at least a little closer to that than he did before those moments.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Now that I think about it, you know, one of the big things was that this wasn't an origin story, and they allude to the thing happening with Ben. I think it was either in Civil War or at the beginning of Homecoming. But that right there, if it's still in the backstory of Spider-Man, which they allude to,
right?
Then in the comic books, when that happened, he grew up a lot.
Right.
Because,
well, and he would, like, and he's living with his aunt and he's been through a lot of family stuff. So, like, I feel like he was still a little too
goofy.
Yeah. Like, I just wanted him to have a little bit more of a serious side to him. And I felt like that was lacking. And it started to annoy me. It started to grate me at the end. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a lot of,
that was my biggest critique. I don't think I really had anything else other than, you know, feeling like they really didn't have to pick on a national landmark to be blown up. As fun as it kind of was to see that, I was like, oh, I don't know, that just kind of annoyed me that it was in DC. I don't know why. Not for any particular reason other than since we have to do, like, a monument, I guess. I don't know. That was just me being weird. I don't have a good rationalization for that. I have a good story rationalization for why him being a goofy kid bugged me.
Yeah, I understand. So what did you like, Ray?
I disagree with Regina's last comment. I think there was...
Do that.
Yeah, well, go ahead, disagree.
Take it.
Well, I think that, you know, there's a difference between book smarts and street smarts, and that he's still true. 15 years old.
Yeah.
You know, him being 15 and... still trying to, you know, I mean, there was a behind the scenes love story going on. There was his friend egging him on and telling, you know, rumors about him behind his back, and, you know, him trying to figure out what this guy was doing with technology, and, you know, all that stuff still weighs heavy on a person.
Right.
He wasn't really a spider, you know, so.
Well, yeah.
I think all that stuff has to come into play with, you know, where his mindset is and him just kind of throwing caution to the wind and being an immature.
Right.
You know, because it does not, I mean, experience, yes, but, you know, 15 is 15. I mean, you're still going through a lot of other things, not just, you know, your skills in fighting crime and things like that. So I think what you're saying is forgiven based on that. I mean, I can understand that it would annoy you because, you know, teenagers
15-year-olds are annoying.
Yeah, 15, Right.
You can say it.
And we all say that having we all say that having been 15-year-olds ourselves, and I can freely admit I was a jackass when I was a teenager. So.
Right. So anyway, that aside, I just the whole point of this story, and they said it from the beginning, was they were showing the grow up process of Spider-Man, and I think they played to it, and they kept true to what they were saying they were going to do, and you know, it didn't bug me. I could see why it would be like annoying, but I mean, as a story arc, I don't think it was a problem, me personally.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, and that was actually one of the things I really liked was the immaturity of Peter. So, you know, I guess it goes into my likes and dislikes. I liked the fact that, you know, it seemed one thing I got out of all the characters in this movie is it all seemed very normal. Like if this was happening in New York City today, like nobody really seemed, except for like the underlings under Michael Keaton's character, the Vulture, I guess, since I didn't say it, but I'll just say it, the Vulture. You know, those guys were idiots, which they usually are, in movies, and I really didn't like that part. Every once in a while, it'd be nice to have, like, the goons and underlings, you know, actually not be idiots.
Contribute,
just, like, you know, smart people can be bad, too, I guess, would be the way to put it.
Yeah,
hey, I just scooped up a bunch of these idiots. You know, anyways, so...
I did have another thing I wanted to kind of pick on, but... When we talk more about Michael Keaton's character, I can get into that.
Okay. So I liked the dad surprise that he ended up being the girlfriend.
Me too. I didn't see that coming. I was so happy because usually I see those like a mile away, and I was like, oh, wow, I didn't even catch that.
Yeah.
So they did a really good job of like springing that on me. I was just like, I felt very uplifted at that part. I was like,
yeah, me too.
Surprise.
I was like, oh, awesome.
They got me.
Yes.
Way to go, guys.
Way to go, guys.
I really like Michael Keaton as the Vulture.
Yes.
I thought he did a really good job. I thought he was one of the best villains I've seen in a really long time.
I agree with that, too.
He seemed... And the fact that he wasn't just... He wasn't inherently evil. You know, I never really felt like this guy was trying to... He was just like an evil genius guy. He was trying to make the best out of a bad situation, though misguided as it is. You know, and eventually he's going to have to be brought down for it, just like anything else. But I thought it was just it was a great villain.
He had a great pathos for why he was doing what he was doing. And they were very clear about it up front. You know, he's like, I'm salvaging all this stuff. I, you know, did put a, you know, a mortgage or two on my house to be able to buy new trucks to do this. I got the, you know, contract fair and square from the city. And then the feds show up and take it all away.
Take it all away, yeah.
And, you know. Right there up above him is Stark Tower, and he's like, you know, these guys aren't going to, you know, lose anything off of this, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, they did a really good job at, you know, explaining why he was the way he was and, you know, why he felt the way he felt. It felt believable, you know. It feels like, you know, somebody who loses their house to a bank, you know, now hates banks, you know.
Right. I'll accept for the part, you know. Well, the feds took the job away from him, but where were they when he was like, where'd you get all the money for this stuff? Just saying, he was running an illegal activity, so if you were going to like poke a hole into that bit of it, it's just like, you think the IRS would be snooping around your house? Look at this house. It's a nice house.
Yeah. I thought I had that thought, too, as soon as it was him, and I was like, oh. Like, because he mentioned a couple of times... This is my only sticking point with him. I loved him as a character. I loved his characterization. I love the surprise that he was Liz's dad. I thought that was beautifully done. And I thought his characterization was kick ass. I just thought he was great. And I've always liked him though. That might have something to do with it. But it's really interesting. I said to Chris as we left, I'm like, it's really interesting to see Batman now become a bad guy.
Yeah.
Cause Batman's always got that like tinge of like the anti-hero going on. And so I thought that played really well into his character as Tombs and the Vulture. I felt like there should have been a little bit more to him saying, I have to stay here, because he kept coming back to, I can't leave. Like, they're like, just pick up and go. And he's like, I can't pick up and go. And I didn't feel like that, you know, just that she was in school really tied enough to that for me. Like, I was imagining that there was a sick relative who was getting special treatment or some kind of like, because they just pick up and go to Oregon. Liz and her mother just leave.
Right.
And he had kept saying, you know, I can't leave, I can't leave. And then they leave immediately. And that was my only sticking point with their story was like,
well, they explained
the circumstances
why
had certainly changed by then.
Well, I know that. I'm not disagreeing with that, but.
Well, they specifically say, you know, we're going to Oregon because my dad doesn't
dad
want
wants
us here
to wait for the trial. Yeah, I know, but.
They don't want us under scrutiny. You know,
he just kept saying he had to stay in the area. Like it was, there was something that was keeping him there. And I felt like her being in school didn't have the depth of that connection that I thought it was going to have, I guess.
We don't know what the mom did either. So
no.
And maybe it was also the mortgage on the house, the big ass house made out of glass that he owned.
Yeah. Yeah, literally a glass house that he owned, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to mention a couple things that I really liked about the film. They're twofold. One is how well I feel they integrated the rest of the MCU into the storyline. I mean, It could have felt like they were bludgeoning you over the head with, look, see, Spider-Man's part of this, you know, this timeline and part of this story. See, he's been here all along. Ha ha. And I didn't feel like that at all. I felt like it was organic. It made sense the way they did it. And, you know, kind of the through lines from the other characters, from the other movies and stuff like that. I thought it was really well woven. I felt like I was watching something that belonged to the entire thing.
Right.
Still.
And can I just insert how much I loved the Captain America videos that they were showing in the school? Oh my God. I cracked up at every one of them.
Did you stay for the end for
yes,
the last
I
one?
Yes, I stayed for
the
end.
Stinger one? Oh God, the stinger one was great.
Oh yeah. Man, I have never, that is the loudest belly laugh I've ever done in a theater since. It's just like, and sometimes patience is really important, and sometimes patience pays off, but sometimes patience doesn't get you anything.
Yeah.
And as soon as he said that, I was just like, oh, he's talking about right now.
I know. I actually shouted at the screen, Cap, I can't believe how bad you burned us.
I know. I was just trolled by Captain America. I was on Team awesome. Cap.
Yeah.
I love the gym teacher line where he goes, I'm pretty sure this guy is a fugitive right now and wanted by every law enforcement.
Yeah, I know. I love that too.
We have to play it.
And
he like points the wrong direction. He's not even standing on the right side of the television.
Yeah. Here he is.
Talk about reality.
Yeah. The other thing that I really
love like
about...
that. I actually thought about you in that scene, right? I'm like, oh, Ryan's going to like this one.
The other thing that I really liked about it was Tom Holland's performance. I was blown away by it when I saw it in Civil War, and blown away by it in this movie. It's like, yeah, the teenage angsty stuff got a little bit old after a while, but he does such an amazing job of capturing the tone and the voice and the feel of how Spider-Man is in the comic books. How he's bantering all the time and making his little jokes and cracks and quips and stuff like that. That's totally Spider-Man. And
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The guy that they got to do it, Tom Holland, his voice is perfect. I mean, he sounds like, you know, when he's doing his American accent, he sounds like a kid from, you know, New York. And just, I was really, really in awe of their casting choice for him. I thought he did just an amazing job in that aspect of it.
I really like I like the tie-in with the Avengers movies. You had mentioned that before, but you know, just Tony Stark's little bits here and there.
Yeah, it was really funny because I was going to say something like he was literally calling it in, because I was like half the time his lines were just overdub. Mm-hmm. But he shows up for two or three scenes, so.
Well, that's what the funny thing was. He wasn't in the suit when the suit first shows up, but then he was. When he goes, you're not even here, and then he walks out of the
he
suit.
Walks out of the
like,
suit.
Ah,
yeah.
You know. So
well,
that
I mean,
part,
it was such a great setup, like.
But I love Jon Favreau. I mean, as a director, as an actor, so it was cool to see him in the movie more,
mm-hmm.
Having an actual part of what he, you know, he does for Tony Stark. But So I really like the tie-in of the Avengers movie. I love that Pepper Potts returns at the end because she's been kind of absent for the last few movies. So the fact that she kind of came back at the end was awesome. Peter's friend, you know, as a sidekick was just great. You know, that guy was a really good...
Did you cringe when he dropped his Lego Death Star?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I did.
I was just like, oh, my God, how many pieces did he just lose?
Oh. Yeah, well, I thought that same thing. And it was like when I saw them putting it all together at the end, I'm just like, you didn't find all the pieces.
But, you know, but thank God for the internet these days, because you can just order what you're missing from Lego directly.
Find all your pieces. That's all you thought.
I know. It's exactly what I thought. I was like, oh, he just lost so many pieces. Those little tiny fiddly bits, they never come out of the corners or out of the
That's a big set. Exactly. Those things went under the bed, man.
Yeah, that things was going to
disappear. So anyway, I love the line, like, when he gets caught at the school and, like, the first thing he thinks of is that he was looking at porn.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was looking at porn? It's like, why did you say that? That's, like, the worst thing you could say in a school library.
Because he was doing worse things in that school library.
Well, yeah, but still.
And it might have scared her away, too. Like, okay, I'm not going to come look at your screen because I really don't want to see that it's there. Like, just shut it off and get out of here, you know? So.
The suit, I love the suit voice, was great comic relief when they disengaged the training wheels mode. Like, she just, her one-liners were awesome. Just like, they rivaled his throughout the whole thing. Just the way that she was so nonchalant, you know, computer about it. And
right.
In the situational comedy.
Instant kill mode? Yeah, I know that was
crazy. No kill mode.
No.
You know the trivia about that, right? The gal who voices Karen, I can't remember the actress's name. She's actually a fairly well-known actress.
I will look it up.
Is married to Paul Bettany, who does the voice of Jarvis
in
Vision. So who better to do it, right?
Well, there you go. That does make sense. I love that whole scene when he's stuck in that military storage bunker.
Oh, I know.
Building.
That was God, just
the way that they
parts.
Cut and edited that together was priceless.
Yeah.
How long has it been? How much?
23 minutes.
23 minutes.
It feels like I've been here forever.
So yes, that part was awesome. I like the, you know, we mentioned the Captain American stingers and stuff like that, but the female interests, you know, the different races they actually threw into the movie was awesome.
Oh.
You know, his girlfriend wasn't white for a change.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I love
it. It was really cool. Nor is MJ, who was also awesome throughout the entire movie. You kind of find that at the end that she was MJ. So
that'll be the next love interest. Okay, so I was going to ask about that. But... I was going to ask about that. Now, MJ is the initials for Peter Parker in the series, like the original love interest, right?
Yeah,
Mary Jane. Yeah.
Mary Jane. I couldn't remember who was Mary Jane. I couldn't remember, but I was like, MJ? She's MJ? Like, isn't that
played
MJ
by
Morgan?
Kirsten Dunst in
the Tobey Maguire one.
The first go of it.
Yeah.
But her little lines throughout the whole thing were awesome. I thought she... Yeah.
Oh, her best one wasn't even the line. It was when he was walking away waving and she's just like this.
Yeah, little, just flips him off.
Everybody else is waving and she's just sitting there.
Yeah. She was great.
And
by the way, it's Jennifer Connelly who was Karen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
I didn't know
she was married to Paul Bettany. They were in A Beautiful Mind together. Not in the same scene, obviously, because he was an imaginary character, but still. I thought I'd throw that little trivia in there.
There you go.
I thought it had a great moral to the story. You know, just by the end, it had a good moral that wasn't, like, shoved in your face too much, but it was there. I love the ending credit art being kind of sketchy, like, old-school drawing. Was really neat. What else did I have in there? I think that's pretty much the... Dead surprise, we talked about that.
I loved how they shot that too. Well, so they're in the car, and of course he's trapped in the vehicle with him. He's like, you don't have to drive us. And then he's trapped in the vehicle with him, and then the light changes and the red light like flashes on his face at the moment that he recognizes. I mean, it's so heavy-handed, But I just loved it. I was like, oh yeah.
It was all the girlfriend's fault. It's like, quit talking.
I know. It was like, oh God, it's like cringe nothing. Because you're like, no, don't say it. Don't, no.
I totally thought he was going to get out of the car without this being a problem. And like, she just kept talking.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Let me give a little bit more away and a little bit more away and a little bit.
I mean, I understand why they did it in the story because she was trying to make him look impressive to her dad.
Right.
Like, oh, you're killing him. You're killing him right now.
Yeah. And you're getting in big trouble. I'd just like to point out on IMDb, because sometimes we get things revealed on IMDb that are not in the movie and may have at some point been cut. But Michael Chernus, who played the engineer who makes the Vulture's weapons, mm-hmm. actually has a name here. He's the Tinkerer.
Well, that's probably somebody who's actually
He certainly did a lot of that.
Right, exactly. But I'm saying, like, so apparently he is a named character from the universe, I'm assuming.
Phineas Mason. Was his actual character.
I remember him calling him Mason. I don't remember him calling him Phineas. But yeah, apparently he's the Tinkerer.
And so. They had Michael Manido or Mando. He was Mac. He played Mac. He has a good character part in Better Call Saul right now. So I really like that guy's an actor. It's cool to see him in something else.
Yeah, the Tinkerer is actually a bad
Jennifer
guy.
Conley is Karen.
Yeah.
I didn't even pick up on that. It was her voice.
Yep.
Chris Evans. I do. Flash was pretty funny on how he kept getting screwed out of every point he was trying to make about Peter. He was the teenage bully.
Oh, right.
Kid.
Yeah.
Flash, yeah. His parts were well placed.
Yeah.
But yeah. Ned was cool. He was a really good sidekick and
Ned was awesome.
There was a lot of culture, I guess, in the movie that you don't normally see. Like if you think about the first Spider-Man movie, like everybody was white. Like
yeah.
all the main characters were white.
They did a good job with diversity of casting.
Yeah, they really did, I thought. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it was great to see it. It made the movie feel definitely more realistic, which, that's probably the big takeaway that I got from this was just the realism of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And like all the movies, the realism was, top notch. Like this could be happening in anybody's family right now, in any school right now. So.
Yep.
But it was a good movie.
Cool.
What did you think, Regina? Were there any other aspects of it that you really liked?
I think we pretty much touched on everything that I had on my list that I made this time, because I'm taking notes now.
List envy.
Yes, list envy. I did want to ask about Spider-Man's love interest being MJ, because her name's Michelle. It's not Mary Jane. So I was just like, wait, MJ, isn't MJ? Yeah, so I just needed to confirm that. And I loved that they kept referencing the song, Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah.
Right, yep. They make that reference like 3 times, and I was like, oh, that's good, I like that. But yeah, I think we pretty much, in the recordings with Cap, the TSA recordings for the school, and then the burn at the end, were definitely among the highlights for me of the whole thing. I loved. If I'm going to get burned by any Avenger, I want it to be Cap, I guess.
Yeah, so I would like to have seen Michael Keaton not be so. I mean, I guess one takeaway from his character, thinking about the scene in the car, was then he started throwing out the "I'm going to kill you" bit and blah blah blah, which seemed a little,
Well, and especially interesting too, because at the end, he's in the prison and he has the chance to send him up, and he doesn't. So.
Yeah, wasn't sure.
And that was the other aspect. That was kind of an interesting twist at the end. It's just like, either he's all mine or, he's letting it go. It's interesting to see, because his character seems like it could go both ways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I felt was a really good sign of exactly how well they had written his character, to have that kind of ambiguity be like, what, did he like want to keep him for himself? Or is he trying to protect him because he's like, because he did try to like have him not get hurt at the end when he was trying to fly away with the case. And he's like, I'm trying to save you. I'm trying to help you. So he could have had some change of heart about him at the end.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I guess we'll
I didn't find the part where he was threatening him in the car all that heavy handed though, because this is somebody who's obviously turned to crime because he's been, stepped on, and he turned to crime because it was threatening his livelihood and his family. And so we've seen that he's willing to go to extreme lengths to protect his livelihood and his family already by the fact that he's turned to crime. So it's not, to me, much of a jump for him to say, hey, you know, don't screw this up. You screw this up, I will kill you and everybody you love, because, you know, I'm protecting mine and my family. So that to me didn't really, you know, seem too out of
context. Out of character.
Yeah, he had the, he pulled the gun. I don't think he needed to pull the gun. Like, he didn't even show him the gun. Didn't even know, you know, there was no reference to the fact that he was holding a gun. So I think that was unnecessary. I think he could have gotten his point across without it.
But I think it illustrated the fact that he knew that even though he was dealing with a kid, that this was a kid who apparently had some extra special abilities and that he should be ready to, you know, put him down quick if he was going to do anything. And I think the fact that he didn't actually show Peter the gun also shows that he was, you know, trying not to be too over the top with them, you know, even though he's, you know, telling him, I'm going to kill you and your entire family or everybody you love if you screw this up, without, you know, waving a gun in his face. I think the idea that he pulled the gun out was more so that he could be ready to do what he needed to do if he had to do it. And it was more for us to ramp up the tension for us who were seeing it and not so much for Peter who doesn't see it.
Right.
Anyway. Cool.
So what do we think overall? What are people's, what's, are we doing thumbs again?
Yeah. Right.
You first. Two thumbs up. I mean, sorry, Regina, I liked it better than Wonder Woman, but.
Really?
Just as a, just as a superhero movie. I just thought it was, I don't know. I like the way that Marvel does their superhero movies better than DC.
Well, I mean, and you just, know, given like DC's history, I can understand that, but I still think Wonder Woman overall was a better movie.
You're biased.
I'm going to agree with Regina on that. I think that
you're biased.
No, I'm not. I don't really even have a dog in that fight, but.
Well, neither do I. Me personally, I liked it better than Wonder Woman. Just as a overall film.
Because it's all subjective, buddy.
Yeah.
So what did you think, Regina? Thumbs up, thumbs down, two thumbs up?
I give it one thumb up. Like, it was a fun popcorn summer movie, but it didn't really do anything for me overall. I actually felt like it went down a little in terms of the Marvel. I think my expectations are so high that it just didn't quite hit what I was hoping for.
So I agree with you on that. And I think if I was going to give it a thumb of anything, it would be this.
The sideways, just one sideways. Like, I'll give it one, you know, just one. If we're doing two is our measure. So I'm giving it 50%, not, you know, if this is 100.
I'm thinking two thumbs up, one thumb up, and then one thumb down, two thumbs down. And
right.
This is right in the middle. I think it was maybe
two, you know, right in the middle.
Yeah. Maybe just a C plus or something. I don't know. I enjoyed the movie. I'm not saying that I didn't like it. I did like it.
Yeah.
Overall. Right. It's just that some of the things that jumped out at me that I mentioned before, just I couldn't get them out of my head. It bugged me. And I think you're right. Part of it was the teenager, you know, angst stuff that, you know, it's just like, oh, come on already. You know, you're dealing with life and death situations. You can, you know, figure this stuff out. This is easy.
Yeah.
So, and to be honest, if I was going to rate it in all the other, with all the other MCU movies, you know, like in a top list, it would probably be at the, you know, the last quarter of that list or something like that. I mean, and again, I'm not saying I hated it, because I don't. I'm just saying that I think there's much better MCU movies out there.
I would agree with you on that one. Like, I liked, like, and I'm not saying that I didn't like it either. I really enjoyed it. It was a good, fun sort of summer movie, but I just didn't feel like it held as much to the standard that I'm holding for MCU. That's one of the problems with being so great.
Yeah.
Is when you keep this kind of like upping a little bit and upping it, it's like, oh, you know, you got something you have to hit, you know, really high to be really high. So maybe that's part, you know, go ahead.
But in all fairness, I honestly, there hasn't been a single one of those MCU movies that I didn't like.
Yeah.
So I think that speaks volumes for what they're doing. I think they're doing a great job across the board. It's just that, like you said, when you're constantly, you know, knocking them out of the park, you know, a fly ball, what is it, ground fly ball, whatever, Ryan, that you get a three run in on. Me trying to talk sports.
Not don't know what you're talking about. So.
That's how bad you're doing it.
Baseball. When you knock the ball out to the wall where it hits the wall and lands on the ground and sign up for a home run. But no, it's just in fair play. It's just, you know, hits
off. Look at Ryan's face. He's like,
Ryan, don't look at me double. Like. Yeah.
Dude, I don't know what you're talking about.
A three base hit or something like that off of the back wall. All right. Don't act like you don't know baseball. You watch the Mariners.
I'm not saying I don't know baseball. I'm just, that's not a good comparison. Come on.
What? The Mariners aren't really baseball?
Well, they're inconsistent seeing, baseball. I'll say that.
Are you saying the Mariners are the kiddie pool of baseball?
Anyway,
let's not dally into the sports thing that many of the people who listen to this show and watch it probably don't know much about, like me.
Right.
I do want to make a point to
yes.
disagree with your guys' points a little bit.
That's right. We'll kind of go back with more.
Okay. Well, so when I say I enjoyed it better than Wonder Woman, it's just because Spider-Man is, you know, has more involvement with a larger universe that we've been connected to for a longer time, and you take into the fact that, you know, all the characters in the movie were good at what they did. They were well cast, they were well written, they were well, received, and I can't say the same about that for all the characters in Wonder Woman or other DC films. You know, it might not have been, you know, the most original thing, and to your guys' point, there you can't really do that anymore. You know, it's, you know, there's been so many movies now in the Marvel Universe that, you know, there's no Big Bang Wow factor anymore, I don't think, with those movies. I don't think you can top where we came from.
I don't know. I think so.
Because they're not new anymore. It's just because the story is so involved in, you know, like you were saying, it's like people that watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and people that read the comic books and, you know, it's just, we're used to it now. And so it's not going to have the same wow factor. But I think just as a complete, you know, movie in itself, not based on the characters necessarily, but as a complete movie, I think they did a really nice job. And I was happy with everybody that was in it. And I couldn't really, you know, couldn't nitpick it too much. It was just an enjoyable experience. So on that aspect, you know, that's why I guess 2 thumbs up for me.
That's fair.
Cool. Yeah.
Nobody's discounting your assessment, man. We're all entitled to our own opinions here. It'd be boring if we're all like, yep.
I don't think you, awesome. I think that's a good point, though. I think in terms of your analysis of Wonder Woman, Ryan, was really about the supporting characters. And I can see your argument here with the way the supporting characters were dealt with here versus Wonder Woman. But I still feel like the significance of the story of Wonder Woman, I think, is greater than this. But like you said,
yes, there was a much exactly. more meaningful, powerful message with Wonder Woman. Yes. I will give you that hands down.
Thank you. Okay.
But as an overall movie, That's
cool.
All right.
I like it.
And we all still love each other. It's okay. I was going to say,
we can have different comes in and
it would be boring if we all agreed on everything all the time.
Well, yeah. And do we know, I should have talked about this before we started. Do we know what we're watching for next month?
Ryan and I were kind of talking about it after you ran off on mommy duty the last podcast. What did you think Dunkirk was going to be what you wanted to do, Ryan, or...
Wait, you're gonna put me on the spot right now while we're recording?
Okay.
Yeah, we'll... Maybe people want to know. Maybe they want to know what they're looking forward to.
Well, let's wrap and we can discuss it.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Geek Embassy Watches Spider-Man Homecoming. We're doing the series, as I've talked about on the website. We just launched a new logo. You may or may not have noticed.
Looks amazing. I love it.
Yay, me too. I'm very pleased.
Yes, I got to say, a lot of that stuff you passed my way was not
man,
very excited.
God, this logo took a lot of work, let me tell you. So check out the website, check out the new logo. If you download the podcast, I'm sure you've seen it because it is the new podcast logo as well. Check us out at the Geek Embassy. So we're doing the Geek Embassy Watches, the Geek Embassy Plays, and the Geek Embassy Reads right now are our series that we have running. We're going to be reading the Dresden Files, the first book, Stormfront, for our first series in that, which is going to start up here in the next month or so. And we're going to be finishing out the Geek Embassy Plays as well. So make sure to check out the finale soon of The Keeper of the Dead, which I can't do justice to the voices the way that Evan does. He's got this performance thing going on with that. So make sure to check out the story and see how it ends. We love your feedback. Please follow us on Twitter at The Geek Embassy and catch us on Facebook. And until next time, get your geek on.